Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. A Canadian report released in March says 90% of women in skilled trades will be harassed at least once in their career. Women in skilled trades often don't have proper equipment that fits or is comfortable. Washrooms on construction sites are often disgusting. Labor Minister David Pacini introduced legislation recently that will address these and many other concerns. Pacini, who is also the local MP for Northumberland Peterborough South, will explain the new law and regulations that will improve conditions for women in skilled trades. And he hopes it will pave the way for more young women to choose the trades as a career. Listen and decide if he hits the mark. I'm so pleased to have with me today Northumberland Peterborough South MPP David Pacini. Welcome back to Consider This Northumberland.
Having me, Rob. Great to be with you.
Recently, you introduced legislation that is aimed at women in the workplace, in particular, women in trades. Can you outline in very broad brush strokes, not getting down too far in the weeds, but in broad brush strokes, this legislation?
Yeah, thanks, Rob. So this is the fifth working for workers legislation. It's like Harry Potter. We just keep doing more and they keep getting better. So this is the fifth, and it's designed, as you mentioned, with a real focus on the skilled trades and in particular, getting women involved. And the why, Rob, is that I think we can all agree that we need hospitals, we need more schools, we need homes, and to do all of this infrastructure that we need, water infrastructure, it's a big one in communities like ours, you need men and women in the trades. And so to do all of the building we need to do in Ontario, ignoring 50% of the workforce is just wrong. And we know that in particular, in building and construction trades, women only represent 4% of the workforce. So increasing that number has been a real focus of our government. And tackling some of the systemic barriers that have led to underrepresentation of women, again, a focus. And that includes things like PPE. That includes things like properly sanitized and cleaned washroom facilities for women, among a myriad of other things we're doing. And that's all, again, with an eye to getting more women into the skilled trades. Because when you have a job in the trades, you've got a career for life.
I understand this is the first of its kind in Canada. What, if anything, existed before this?
Yeah, good question. So we never had commitments on construction sites to have washrooms for women. We do now. Occupational Health and Safety Act has existed before, but you point to what's sort of new about it, that will be the first jurisdiction to explicitly require that washroom facilities be maintained in a clean and sanitary condition by the employer. And that will be the first in Canada to do it. And having the schedules, we'll be amending, if passed, the Occupational Health and Safety Act to require that workplace parties keep, maintain, and make available a record of cleaning as prescribed. So we'll be prescribing that in regulation. And again, we'll be the first jurisdiction in Canada to have this policy in our health and safety legislation. And we know that construction and tradesperson annual surveys point to bathrooms as a big reason why we're not getting more people into the trades. And so I would sum it up by this. I mean, for those that have been in a university environment, for those that work on Bay Street and have an expectation of washrooms, we're taking that same expectation from Bay Street and we're bringing it to Main Street, where workers deserve the same level of cleanliness.
Why do you think this aspect of the workplace was ignored previously?
That's a really good question, Rob. I think that this goes back to the very stigma that we are trying to break in countries like Germany. And this touches on another piece of our legislation, the FAST, the Focused Apprenticeships and the Skilled Trades. In countries like Germany, they really look at skilled trades as a profession. And that's exactly what Premier Ford and our government are trying to do, because we will never tackle our infrastructure backlog if we don't really look at this as a career. And it is a career. When you have a job in the trades, you can become an entrepreneur. You can do so many things. And we know that the pay is very good as well. So to answer your question, I think this goes back to the very stigmas where for too long, these were viewed as, if you're not on track to do what society expects of you, which is to go to university, you always have a fallback. And we're saying trades and a career in the skilled trades, especially with technology, especially with some of the requirements in compulsory trades like electrician, plumbing, you have to have a high school OSSD. You have to have your math, and we're really looking at this as an equal part of the offerings we're providing youth in K-12 education and a profession. And so I think that, again, directly answer your question, this goes back to that very stigma we're trying to crack.
Why is it so important then to have women working in skilled trades?
I think for a variety of reasons. I think, studies have shown the value of when you have women in leadership, when you have that sort of parity. I mean, it's a societal expectation nowadays. The days of stereotyping particular jobs for men and or women are over. And I think it's about equality of opportunity. And, I've had the opportunity as labor minister to visit a number of job sites and speak to women, and it's remarkable. I was recently with Oaks Revitalization, who helped those justice involved individuals, and I spoke to a woman who was who'd had some temporary time in incarceration, and the remarkable sense of fulfillment and purpose she gets from a career in the trades. We have a very ambitious building agenda, and you can't accomplish and do that ignoring 50% of the workforce. So for a variety of reasons, we need to get more women involved in the trades and tackle the systemic barriers, things like personal protective equipment. This I'm sick and tired of visiting job sites and hearing from women that they're wearing, coveralls that are down to their knees or gloves, when doing high voltage work that doesn't fit. And so we're trying to tackle these barriers and ensure that they have the supports that they need. And an important part of our bill is a consultation, a document we'll be posting on our registry, which looks to expanding the types of safety equipment that should be provided on construction sites. An additional work we're doing with the WSIB to ensure that we have properly fitted PPE, because an every ounce, every dollar you invest in prevention upstream pays dividends downstream. And so, we're really looking at making sure that women have the supports that they need to enter the trades.
Well, it's interesting, too. I mean, in the 19th century, women worked in the trades. Look at World War II, for example.
Yeah.
Women were heavily involved in the types of trades and skilled trades that we're talking about. What happened in between that sort of changed that perspective?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Rob, and actually something I'm going to start mentioning. You think back to the war effort on the home front in building ammunitions, etc., and maintaining our manufacturing. Women answered the call in a big, big way. And again, I there's a variety of, you know, as a student of history, there's a variety of reasons since then. And I think, again, pointing to traditional stereotypes that we're bashing, you know, that we're smashing through these glass ceilings for women and working with them and being responsive. And I will say that from some of the roundtables I've been in, I've been really taken aback as someone who's been 7 months on the job as labor minister. Instinctively, you may think that the feedback would be for heavy regulation or government involvement. And some of the themes I've heard are just that women want to be protected by properly fitted PPE. Women want to have spaces on the job site, you know, like washrooms on a construction site that are clean. Mentorship is another big one, perhaps the most important piece on the role of mentors in the work site. And I was just recently at a Skills Ontario panel where I spoke with a refugee who has now been a remarkable advocate for women in the trades. And again, it's about mentorship and role models, and that's been another theme that's emerged.
Women represent about 1 in 19 workers in skilled trades. What is being done to make it more attractive for young people graduating from high school?
Really good question. So a few things. I mean, we've taken high school and mandated a technical trade for all students in high school. We've launched the FAST program, which gives experiential learning opportunities for youth. You know, I think to my time, I remember doing some courses in grade 12 that counted towards my university degree. And it was called an advanced placement or AP course at the time. I think to students in the IB programs and other programs like that, we haven't given those opportunities to youth in the trades that give them an opportunity. So this FAST program, which gives up to, you know, 80% of your electives, could be done through experiential learning. That's an important thing, component on so many levels. One, it provides experiential learning opportunities. Two, it counts towards your OSSD. Three, that you also have the ability to count those hours towards your level one apprenticeship. So these are important components to attract youth into the trade. We've launched the Level Up Skilled Trades Fairs, and one is coming to Cobourg in the fall, which are the largest job fairs for the skilled trades in Ontario's history. We've had to date last year over 25,000 youth go through and become inspired to enter the trades. And, you know, I would also say just the opportunities, the earning potential is a big attractor. And lastly, for those who face barriers, we've turned the loans program for tools and equipment, we've turned that into grants. This was a program under the previous government that cost more to administer than loans that went out. And it saddled men and women in the trades with the noose of debt. And we've turned that into a grant program, supported youth from historically underrepresented and or marginalized communities, socioeconomically disadvantaged communities, you know, to be able to get the equipment to support them in their apprenticeship. And it's been, you know, a successful program. So I think looking at all of those various barriers, none of which in isolation are the sole reason, but when viewed in totality are part of a plan to get more youth into the trades, to break down barriers. And statistically, it's working. Last year, we saw one of the highest years of registration into apprenticeships in Ontario's history. We saw a near 30% increase in women registering into apprenticeships, a near similar increase in Indigenous youth, and racialized and historically underrepresented groups, a significant increase there as well. So on all fronts, statistically, the plan is working.
The YMCA in Nova Scotia released a study in March saying that 90% of women in trades were being harassed at least once in their career. What is being done to protect women who enter the skilled trades against this type of misogynistic behavior?
Yeah, very, very good, Good question. So a few things. One, we're updating the Occupational Health and Safety Act to protect against virtual harassment, really reflecting the modernized use of technology in the workplace. And two, we're launching consultations on duty to act, Rob. And this is one of the, I think, the most consequential yet underreported on pieces of our legislation, which is consulting on strengthening accountability in the workplace harassment system. So up to date, employers are required to conduct an investigation into incidents and complaints that is appropriate. However, what we've seen, Rob, is no requirement to take action. And we would consult on strengthening the duties of workplace parties to ensure that there is accountability. And you cited a report, again, the Building and Construction Tradeswomen 2022 survey did cite enforcement of anti-harassment policies as a top five response to suggestions on how my company could improve. The Women Abuse Council of Toronto, a survey in 2021, talked about, you know, fearful to speak up because previous reports have resulted in no action being taken. So I think launching consultation on the duty to act is one that requires robust consultation and feedback, but Ontario will be the first jurisdiction to embark on this.
How do you propose to change attitudes, though, in the workplace for women in trades when often, you know, and the report is pretty clear about this, the comments and the behaviors are characterized as being a joke or being harmless? I mean, you can legislate, you can have people do investigations, but if there isn't a change in the attitudes of the industry towards women, what does all that really mean?
Well, I think there are changing attitudes. I would say this is happening organically outside of government. You know, you have unions like LIUNA, the Laborers Union, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, all incorporating in their in-class learning component the training like the Be More Than a Bystander training, which really tackles the culture of among young men entering the skilled trades. And so we're organically seeing that already. I would also say that you're right, you can put in place all the sort of measures, regulations you want, but what is most inspiring to me is visiting our college sites, visiting our union training halls. And when I look out on the cohort of level one, two, three, apprentices, I see the sorts of change that in and of itself is going to empower a whole next generation of skilled tradesmen and women. I see the change. I see a graduating class that is more representative of the Ontario, the very diverse Ontario that we're a part of today. I see women. I visit specialist high school major programs in the Niagara region, for example, affiliated with the local carpenters union down there. And if handshakes alone could tell me the destiny of one, the way that they look you in the eye, shake your hand, and tell me what they're going to do with their life, then it really leaves me with a sense of profound optimism seeing young women who know what they're going to do. They want to run businesses. They want to join either a union or become their own employer. And it's really inspiring to see. So, again, there are various things we've touched on in our conversation that we are doing to help remove barriers for women and to help support them. But in and of itself, just seeing this new cohort, that's the type of change that is. They are the change, and it's happening with every graduating class.
Now, this legislation does not just address women in the trades. It also looks at improving safety on the work site, and it calls for a review of critical injuries and fatalities. Now, we just commemorated dead and injured workers at the Day of Mourning a few weeks ago. How does this address the concerns of many in the labor movement towards health and safety in the workplace?
Yeah, it's a good question. I work very closely with our chief prevention officer, and we often talk. I mean, this legislation also expands WSIB coverage for firefighters and addresses the latency periods for skin cancer to build on esophageal, to build on thyroid and pancreatic. But you point to it's, you know, often we spend a lot of time talking about injuries and talking about workplace exposures, but not nearly enough time on prevention. So our chief prevention officer will launch a review to consolidate causal factors in construction fatalities and critical injuries, evidence from stakeholders, you know, jurisdictional research. And I think another piece is fatigue as a causal factor and a review of the struck by incidents to understand opportunities to standardize safety approaches. So, you know, I've had probably the most difficult experience that I've ever had as an elected member when you get those emails of a workplace fatality, because behind the broad sketch I get, obviously for personal privacy protection reasons, I don't get get the specific details, but with every email I get, and I remember the first one I got when I became minister, you know that behind it is a family, behind it is a loved one, you know, who won't be kissed on the cheek by the, you know, their significant other who left that morning and will never, you know, come home. And so I think we all recognize that one death is too many. And so looking at those causal factors and having our chief prevention officer do the review, Dr. Joel Moody, our entire building trades, Ontario Building Trades, is supportive of this. And while we have seen, you know, varying statistics with respect to the deaths on a year by year, you know, we had 16 last year, 18 the year prior, 23 the year prior to that. These are too many. And so looking at those causal factors, looking at fatigue, and really we haven't examined fatigue in a really comprehensive manner. So having our prevention council seized with that will provide good recommendations to me. At the end of the day, I mean, I'm a politician. My job is to lean on the experts in public policy and draft public policy that's reflective of the types of studies that we're embarking on with this fatality, a critical injury review.
I have a quick question of a local nature as well. So if I could just for a moment, I wonder what you thought of municipalities looking to hire lobbyists to push for infrastructure money from the Ontario government, as was the case of Brighton Council earlier this month.
Yeah, boy, are we shifting gears there. This is the first time, Rob, that I've ever become aware of a local, in 6 years in office, of a local municipality seeking lobbying support for infrastructure funding. We've always been very successful in our community in getting infrastructure dollars in. You'll recall in Westwood, we actually announced the doubling of, if not tripling, of the Ontario Community Infrastructure Fund in Westwood. In our riding with Premier Ford and Minister Surma, just prior to the last election. And so I was caught off guard by that. At no point did the municipality seek my advice or input on this. And you know, it actually was somewhat disappointing to hear some of the comments by councillors. I think it's councillors that I haven't heard from on this. It's councillors that I think those comments reflect a fundamental misunderstanding of the Lobbying Registration Act. And so I have subsequently shared the Integrity Commissioner's guideline on the Lobbyist Registration Act just for their own information. But at the end of the day, I value my working relationship with Municipality of Brighton. And, you know, whatever they decide to do there, while it's my understanding that a lobbying firm has since parted ways with the municipality, it's not going to deter in any way my resolve to get this funding. And I would also mention that on, you know, six plus occasions, my office and I directly have written to the municipality about this fund. I've had very productive meetings with the municipality. The mayor attended a recent meeting just 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, with all other mayors from Northumberland County, where we discussed this specific fund just prior to the application deadline date. So I've been very involved with the municipality on this fund, and will continue to work very closely with Mayor Ostrander and council to address their infrastructure needs, and I'm proud of our record to date.
Have you spoken since this story broke? Have you spoken with anybody on council, either Mayor Ostrander or any of the councillors directly?
Yes, I have. I've spoken. I speak at regularly with Mayor Ostrander, so we maintain a very frequent dialogue, a close working relationship. But I've had a few of the councillors reach out just since then. I don't think it was anyone's desire to end up having the municipality of Brighton in sort of the provincial media scan and landscape for these reasons. So we look forward to doubling our efforts and to working together on these infrastructure funds. And I just underscored that I'm always here, just a phone call away for any needs. And I think if we look back to other sort of like examples, we've worked very closely when we wanted to transform King Edward Park from the new roof. That's hardcore infrastructure that we've supported, to the pickleball courts, the skateboard park, the small businesses, and the food trucks that are there. We've really transformed pickleball the way that park is from a recreational infrastructure perspective. And also, the Premier, myself, ministers are always available through many forums like ROMA, Rural Ontario Municipal Association, AMO, and also meetings. I quite frequently, and quite frankly, in the last two months, have had a number of mayors come down to Queen's Park to have one-on-one sit-downs with the Premier to address our community's needs. So I'll keep doing that and keep working very closely with them as we support a growing community.
And just for some of the listeners who may not always understand the role of an MPP, that is one of your major jobs when you're elected, is to champion local projects and local municipal infrastructure and things of that nature.
Absolutely. I mean, I've got seven lower tier municipalities in the County of Northumberland alone, another two in Peterborough and one in Durham. So three distinct regions, two Indigenous Nations, Alderville and Hiawatha. So, I work very closely with all, and at its core, that's my job. I think to some recent examples, Mayor Hankivski came down, met with Health Minister, Mental Health Minister, and Premier directly on the Youth Wellness Hub, which was, of course, a few months later highlighted in budget. Now, Rob, not all files move that quickly. That was a great example of everybody rowing in the same direction to get that youth wellness hub in Port Hope. I think to Trent Hills, who'd advocated for that new rec center for years. And then, when I was elected, we sat down both with Premier Ford, with then Minister Scott, and we got the funding, I think, to Crystal Springs in Otonabee South Monaghan. They were unsuccessful one, if not two, 2 years while I've been MPP, and we changed our approach and ultimately got that Crystal Springs water main replacement done. So the point I'm trying to make here is that, sometimes we move very quickly, sometimes it takes a little longer, but at its core, my role is to elevate these voices, is to bring the concerns of our community down to Queen's Park. I take great pride in the, bringing the ministers, connecting dots, working and rolling up my sleeves to deliver results for our community. I can point to infrastructure in every single corner of our riding, which speaks to results. And, and I'll continue doing that. I really value these relationships. I value my relationship with municipalities. I'm not naive enough to think that every single councillor, most municipalities have 5 to 7 councillors across all 10 lower tier municipalities, are are going to actively, you know, campaign with me. But I think the takeaway is when I'm elected, it's not on partisan stripes. I have close relationships with municipal councillors who've actively worked with other political parties. We're friends. We respect each other because when we work together, we can accomplish a great deal. So at its core, we got to work together.
It must have left you shaking your head after you heard this story.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of saying it. I probably did exactly that, scratched my head and said, what the hell? Because this was on the heel of the mayor of Coburg who'd asked to come down, and he had to sit down for, you know, over half an hour with the premier, just sharing, some of the needs of that community. We're always going to have bumps on the road, and it's, again, not going to change whatsoever my approach. If anything, it only causes me to redouble efforts with Brighton and beyond. But it was disappointing to see that. I mean, I want my community to be known for other reasons. You know, the way we stood up during the pandemic with the Coburg Community Center that got provincial-wide news. Standing up for our response during various emergencies, I think, to Cramie Township when they welcomed during storm into the Keeler Center that caught attention. And these are the types of things I want, my fellow colleagues to know my community for. So, but again, regardless, I've had good conversations with councillors and with the mayor. In response to this, and I'm working to schedule a number of meetings, and we'll keep advocating for their infrastructure needs. And I would point out that we have quadrupled the fund. So I think it's important to note that the government is putting our money where our mouth is when it comes to the critical water and wastewater infrastructure we need to support more affordable homes, to support growing communities, and I'm proud of these investments.
David Piccini, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
That was Northumberland Peterborough South MPP David Piccini. He is also the Ontario Labour Minister. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.